You're listening to KIXI Seattle. It's 10 o'clock and time for the news from CBS.
CBS News. Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev visits Romania on Monday, a visit both nations are hailing as exceptionally significant. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS radio network. Soviet-Romanian relations have been warming lately, with the USSR apparently increasingly willing to accept a certain amount of independence among its Eastern European satellites. Romania has built a reputation for being one of the independent-minded states in the communist orbit, and Romanian officials say they're hoping the visit will bring about what they call a Yugoslav result. Yugoslavia is another of the independent-line communist states. Visiting there last week, Brezhnev publicly acknowledged Belgrade's autonomy. Standing at the crossroads in Bucharest is Nicolae Ceaușescu, the Romanian leader who 6 years ago told the Kremlin flatly he would pursue an independent course in friendship with both communist and capitalist nations. In keeping with that declaration, Romania and the United States Sunday signed an unprecedented 10-year trade agreement, the broadest pact ever reached by the United States with the Soviet bloc nation. It calls for cooperation in economic, industrial, and technical fields, as well as establishing principles and guidelines for joint U.S.-Romanian ventures and other forms of business ties. Commerce Secretary Elliot Richardson, who signed the pact, is to meet with Ceaușescu on Monday before Brezhnev arrives for his three-day visit. Monday is Visit the White House Day for President-elect Carter. He and Mrs. Carter flew into Washington Sunday evening in preparation for 2 days of sessions aimed at smoothing the process of transition of power. It's been some 25 years since Mr. Carter could call Washington home, having been stationed there while in the Navy. The future First Family got a bird's-eye view of the Capitol as their plane let down low over the city on final approach to National Airport. Then they went by motorcade, past the Lincoln Memorial, drove along Pennsylvania Avenue past the White House, then made a U-turn to take them to Blair House, made available for their visit by President Ford. The president-elect was greeted by a gaggle of reporters in front of the house, which once served as a temporary White House, and where gunmen had attempted to shoot their way in to assassinate President Harry S. Truman. And Mr. Carter was asked about his thoughts upon arriving in the District of Columbia.
Point of gratitude to the people of this country for giving me their confidence and determination not to disappoint them.
Morning appointments for the president-elect include Office of Management and Budget Director James Lynn, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, followed by a luncheon meeting with HEW Secretary David Matthew. Mr. and Mrs. Carter will make an emotionally charged trip across Pennsylvania Avenue in the afternoon to visit their future home, the White House. The president-elect will meet with President Ford, while the future First Lady will be shown around by Mrs. Ford. Later in the afternoon, Mr. Carter will meet with Federal Reserve Board Chairman Arthur Burns. A member of the Utah Board of Pardons said Sunday that a hearing on Gary Gilmore's request for execution by a firing squad could be moved up a few days, particularly if, as has been suggested, delay could result in the convicted murderer being set free on a technicality. More from Debbie Bromberg of CBS radio affiliate KSL.
Under question is a Utah law requiring an execution to take place not more than 60 days after sentencing. Utah County Attorney Noel Wooten says if the Board of Pardons hearing takes place on December 6th as scheduled to consider Gilmore's death sentence, the 60-day limit will have lapsed and Gilmore technically would be detained without a sentence. Board member Thomas Harrison says they've referred the problem to the Attorney General's office.
If it appears there is merit to Mr. Wooten's question, then to protect the judicial system, to make sure that things are done properly, we might move our date up 2 or 3 days.
Meanwhile, Gilmore continues his hunger strike, drinking only coffee and water. Debbie Bromberg for CBS News in Salt Lake City.
The Greek Merchant Marine Ministry reports all 8 crew members of a sunk Greek cargo ship missing and feared dead. The ship, the 3,200-ton Minilord with a cargo of iron ore, sank immediately after colliding with a Panamanian freighter off Corinth in southern Greece. The Panamanian ship suffered only minor damage, reported no one aboard hurt. Now this.
For 125 of America's 200 years, the YMCA has been in the people business. And it speaks to we the people in many voices. In sports, the Y invented basketball and volleyball, too. It pioneered in camping and in adult education. Today, it has cardiovascular health programs, parent-child programs, programs for troubled kids. And the Y pioneered in aquatics.
I learned to swim at the Y.
So did I.
And at Y Camp, I had a lot of fun and learned how to get along with other kids.
Me too.
And the Y speaks to us in many languages. Today, the Y is in 86 countries, helping people in many ways.
From youth work to summer camp, from work with our armed forces to teenage problems, the Y is there to help.
So join the Y. It's in the people business.
Israelis are fighting a five-mile-wide oil slick near the Red Sea resort town of Eilat. The battle began after tons of oil spilled from a tanker on Sunday. The first line of defense was deploying floating booms, but they failed to contain the slick. Officials fear the town's beaches could be contaminated for several months. I'm Mike Stanley, CBS News.
Listening to KIXI Seattle, coming up on 10:07, and time for the CBS Mystery Theater.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. They say Mark Twain was America's greatest humorist, and that's probably true because he was one of the most serious men ever to be born in this country. To Mark Twain, laughter and tragedy were two sides of the same coin, and most of the time, the coin was counterfeit, which in itself is the great joke life plays on most of us. And since life is a jest which ends in a mystery, we are privileged to present one of Mark Twain's greatest mystic fantasies.
You can save him.
They all think he stole the money.
But it isn't true.
You can think of everything. Think of something now. Something. Help me.
Call another witness.
There are no witnesses. All we have is his own word that he didn't steal the money.
You do have a witness.
Who?
The money.
The money? What kind of witness is that? What can money do for him?
Well, you know the old saying, money talks.
Our mystery drama, The Mysterious Stranger, was adapted from the Mark Twain classic, especially for the Mystery Theater, by Sam Dan, and stars Tony Roberts. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The standard engine is a V8. Standard tires, steel-belted radials. There are front and rear stabilizer bars, special springs and shock valving, fast ratio power steering, and a rally steering wheel. What makes all this interesting is that it belongs to a full-size six-passenger Buick, the 1977 LeSabre Sport Coupe. You'll have to drive it to believe it.
Hey, what's gotten into you lately anyway? Dust? Vapors? Gases? Toxins?
Watch what you breathe on the job. Be careful of air full of residue.
If you want to keep working, remember this. Your lungs must keep on working too.
Use your head, save your lungs. Your local lung association considers it a matter of life and breath.
Hello, this is Paulette Goddard. This year marks the 30th anniversary of CARE, C-A-R-E, the International Aid and Development Organization, which provides needy people around the world with food, tools, and equipment, the means for them to help themselves. Now, when CARE first began its work just after the Second World War, I recognized how important its work was, and I did what I could to help. Today, the needs are still great. There are hungry children and desperate people who need your help. Your contributions to CARE help provide food and the means to grow food, tools, equipment, and know-how to build roads, safer water systems, clinics, feeding centers, and schools. In the American tradition of generosity and concern for people, won't you help these needy people free themselves from hunger, poverty, and despair?
Send your check or money order to CARE, Box 576, New York, 10016.
It is the winter of the year 1590, and we are in Austria, in a sleepy country village. Here, high in the mountains, there are still demons and evil spirits, and witches are burned at the stake regularly. But for most people, it is a calm place, a quiet place, a prosperous place.
My name is Theodore Fischer. I'm the son of the church organist, who was also the leader of the musicians, teacher of the violin, composer of the hymns, tax collector of the commune, and in many ways, a useful citizen. I am not useful at all. I have been away to the university in Vienna, where I became a lawyer. There isn't much opportunity to practice law here. The priest settles all the religious disputes, and the astrologer, I'll explain more about him later, settles everything else. Well, it was a beautiful day, and my only annoyance was the fact that my pipe had gone out, and I had neglected to bring a flint with me.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning to you, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I seem to have startled you.
Oh, it's quite all right.
Is there any way I can be of service?
Service? No. No, I don't believe so.
There's nothing you require?
Require? Oh. Well, I would like a light for my pipe.
A little thing like that must not stand in the way of your happiness. May I?
He took my pipe and he... You must understand this. How can I say it? He simply blew his breath on it. And the tobacco glowed red and spirals of blue smoke rose from the bowl. I jumped up.
Please, please, don't be frightened.
But
it was just a trick.
A trick?
Of course. What did you think?
Well...
A little conjurer's tricks. Hmm?
What else can you do?
Anything, anything. Do you remember when you were a child? You had a toy castle, and there were knights and ladies in the courtyard and cannoneers along the walls.
I do remember that. How would you know?
Well, it's a trick. Now, let us build that castle, hmm?
With what?
With this pile of dirt. But what? Everything, everyone was dirt to begin with. Isn't that so, Theodore?
How do you know my name?
What a trick. And really, there's absolutely nothing to it. All you do is take some dirt.
All he did was take some dirt. And before you knew it, he made a crowd of little men and little women, each no bigger than your little finger, and they all went diligently to work as they cleared a space of a couple of yards and began to build a cunning little castle. 500 of these tiny,
but living, breathing people.
Swarming about, laboring diligently, wiping the sweat off their faces, I looked at the stranger and I asked, "Who are you?"
"An angel."
"Of course. An angel. Who else? Do you have a name?"
"Well, certainly. Satan."
"Satan?
Why do you seem so distressed?"
"Satan? Well, that's his name, you know."
"Yes, I know, I know. He's my uncle."
"But you said you were an angel."
"Well, surely you remember he was an angel once himself."
"Yes, I didn't think of that."
"Before the fall. But he was blameless."
Would it be rude if I asked?"
"No, it wouldn't be rude, and I should forgive you even if it were. Yes. Yes, I have. I've seen him millions of times since I was just a little child, hardly 1,000 years old. I was his favorite."
1,000 years old?"
"I'm about 16,000 years old by now. That is the way you count time."
16,000 years old? You must have seen..."
"Oh, I've seen it all. I saw Adam created and Abel murdered. I saw Samson surge against the pillars and bring down ruin and death. Oh, what haven't I seen? Ah, the castle is finished. There. How do you like it?"
"How could anyone help but like it? It's perfect. These people are actually human. It's another world." Someone fired a pistol."
No, it's thunder."
"Thunder? But there isn't a cloud in the sky."
"Oh, not in yours, but in theirs. See how the sky above the castle becomes dark and terrible. The thunder, the lightning."
"People. The poor little people. They're terrified. You're killing them. They'll all be dead. Look. The earth is opening under their feet. They're going there. The earth has swallowed them up. They're all gone. Oh, those poor people."
"Oh, don't weep for them. They're of no value."
But they were living creatures."
"It's no matter. We can make plenty more. Shall I?"
"Oh, no. You'll only destroy them again."
"Well, that's the history of the world, isn't it?"
"Well, good morning, Theodore."
"Oh, you startled me, Uncle Peter."
"I? How could I startle anyone?"
I didn't see you coming."
"Were you busy with great thoughts?"
"Oh, no. I was merely talking to this..." "Huh. Well, there was someone here just a moment ago."
"Oh, yes, my boy. I know it affects me, too. I keep seeing people who aren't there. Myself."
"What are you doing here, Uncle Peter?"
"What am I doing here? Well, something brought me here, but I can't seem to remember what. I'm not myself these troubled days. I'm not myself. Well, good day, Master Theodore."
"Now, as I was saying..."
"Where did you go?"
"I merely made myself invisible."
"Yes, but you should talk to Uncle Peter. He's not dull and ignorant like I am."
"And besides, he has a beautiful niece, huh?"
"Margaret. Satan. Could you help them?"
"Help them?"
"Uncle Peter, that's what I call him, but he used to be Father Peter."
"I know, a priest."
"You know?"
"Yes, until he was accused of some heresy."
"It was the astrologer."
"Why is everyone so afraid of the astrologer? Now, what was the heresy he accused Uncle Peter of?"
"It doesn't matter. It was enough to be accused by the astrologer."
"I see."
"You see, folks have nothing to do with Uncle Peter these days, and he and Margaret are about to starve."
"And you want me to help, huh?"
"Please. All he needs is a little money to pay the rent on his cottage. Buy some food."
"He might not thank me for it. You might not thank me for it."
"I try to help him and Margaret, but they're too proud. Wouldn't it be easy for you to have him find... Yes, just find some money."
"It could be dangerous."
"Why?"
"Well, because it could change the entire course of his life.
Yes, but that's exactly what he needs, to have the present course of his life changed.
Every man's life consists of links in a chain. Each link is an act. It has its proper place in the chain. Remove one link, and the entire future becomes different.
But I've been trying to tell you, he needs another future.
Oh, you have a great deal to learn. I shall see you again.
Where are you going?
I have an errand to perform.
You won't help, Uncle Peter.
Well, I'm not sure you'll consider it help, but we shall see what we shall see.
And he was gone. As suddenly, as unaccountably as he had appeared, a mysterious stranger had vanished. Was it a dream? My imagination? No. In the first place, I am not a dreamy person. Second, it was too real, too vivid. And while I was still debating the matter in my mind, I became aware of Uncle Peter.
I remember now, Theodore.
What do you remember, Uncle Peter?
Why, I have come here. Yes, I lost my purse. Yeah, there wasn't much in it, but a very little is a great deal to me, for it was all I had. Have you seen it, my lost purse?
No, Uncle Peter, but I shall be happy to help you look.
That is what I was going to ask you, yes. But it won't be necessary. Here it is. But
yes. But what, Uncle Peter?
It's mine, and yet it isn't mine.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Well, the purse is mine, yes, clearly mine, but not the contents. This is fat. Mine was flat. This is heavy. Mine was light. Look.
I looked, and I listened. I could hear the jingle of coins, gold coins. And then I saw them, as Uncle Peter knelt on the grass and carefully poured the coins on the ground. There were hundreds of them. I'd never seen so many gold coins in my life. Such bright, shining gold coins. It almost hurt my eyes to look at them. They were so bright, so new, so freshly minted.
Who has been here?
Why?
No, you must not lie to me, Theodore. Has anyone been here?
Not a human being, Uncle Peter.
I don't understand. I know you're telling me the truth. It's the money. It comes to over 1,100 ducats. Oh, dear, if it were only mine.
But it is yours, Uncle Peter, every single piece.
Oh, no, only 4 ducats are mine. That's all that were in the purse when I lost it. The rest, yeah, and I do need them so badly. Yeah. No, the fact is, this money is not mine.
But the money is in your purse.
I cannot account for it unless some enemy... Yes! It's a trap.
Oh, but Uncle Peter, with the exception of the astrologer, you don't have a real enemy in the village. Nor does Margaret.
No, it must be a trap. I must have an enemy.
Do you have an enemy rich enough to chance 1,100 ducats just to do you a mean turn?
Well, I...
Of course not. It's yours. Every bit of it. Didn't you pray for help?
Yes.
Well, isn't this help?
Yes, I'll take it, and I shall do good things with it, and I'm sure everything will be all right.
Of course, Uncle Peter, everything will have to be all right.
But you know, and I know, that it's not going to be all right. People may get to live happily ever after in many of Mark Twain's stories, but getting there is usually quite a problem. Also, we've been chatting here about someone called the astrologer. He shows up soon to complicate matters. All in all, Act Two will pose plenty of problems when it arrives here in just a few moments.
It's 2 a.m. A man is at your back door, cutting out one of the small panes of glass. He knows that you're asleep upstairs, but he doesn't know that waiting for him, right down the hall, is a master lock burglar alarm, the new Ultrason X. It looks like a small stereo speaker, just plugs into any electrical outlet. When it senses movement, it starts screaming, and it can set off remote alarms by sending a signal over the household wiring. It'll even set off remote alarms in a neighbor's house. The man eases the glass out, reaches in, unlocks your door, and you're safe. You can have this electronic burglar protection for less than you might think. To find the nearest Master Lock Alarm dealer, call this toll-free number right now, 800-528-6050, 800-528-6050. Call tonight and sleep tight tomorrow night.
Opportunity to become drown-proof.
Hey, Bud, what's this drown-proof bit?
Can you swim, sir?
No.
Then the YMCA wants to drown-proof you and every other non-swimmer in town by teaching you how to swim.
No kidding.
That's right. Think of the fun and exercise you'll have swimming, and you'll be able to enjoy all the other water sports, too, in safety. That's something to celebrate in this bicentennial year.
What's the bicentennial got to do with it?
How did George Washington get to Trenton?
He crossed the Delaware in a rowboat.
Sir, would the father of our country have set foot in a rowboat if he couldn't swim? He had to set a good example.
Like father, like son, eh?
And like mother, like daughter. Martha knew how to swim, too. Everybody's welcome at the Y to learn how to swim. So drown-proof yourself and your family and make George Washington proud of you. Hear ye, hear ye.
Theodore Fisher is telling the story of Mark Twain's mysterious stranger. And Theodore is the only one in the small village who has seen him. The mysterious stranger claims to be Satan's nephew, but by now we can safely assume it's the old boy himself. Mark Twain always likes to use these little tricks. Throw a surprise visitor into quiet little town and watch the ripples swell into waves. It made immense talk in the village the next day. Father Peter told the entire circumstance just the way it happened. He said the only way he could account for it was, well, it must have been the hand of Providence. Suddenly, Father Peter and Margaret had plenty of friends, or at least visitors. Mothers started sending their daughters to Margaret for piano lessons, and it began to look like the old adage was true. You have no trouble making money once you have money.
Oh, Theodore, how long have you been standing there?
I didn't want to interrupt you, Margaret.
I don't know when I've been so happy.
I'm glad you have so many friends.
Well, it's the gold that has many friends. I still have the very few who always... Well, you know what I mean.
And how is your uncle?
He's a new man. But I'm afraid.
Afraid? Of what?
Well, Uncle Peter says it was the hand of Providence that brought the gold.
And, wasn't it?
Well, I believe it was. But there are tongues wagging in the village. There are those who say it's the hand of Satan.
Satan?
Yes.
Well, how would they know? I mean, why should Satan want to give your uncle all that money?
Theodore, I don't understand it. One day we're poor, the next day we're rich. One day we're alone in the world, and the next day we have scores, hundreds of friends.
Don't even try to understand it. Everything will be all right.
But one thing troubles me deeply.
What?
The astrologer. We have yet to hear from the astrologer.
Oh, the astrologer. Oh, well, what can he do anyhow? I tried to pass it all off as a joke. But the truth is, the very name of that man sent shivers down my spine. The astrologer. He made it his business to know everything that went on in town, and to become involved in it somehow. A few days later, a note was delivered to me. It contained five words. I want to see you. That's all. No please, or if it's convenient, or by your leave. Just an order. As if he had no doubt it would be obeyed.
So kind of you to come, Theodore.
Yes, sir.
You were there when Peter claims he found this money.
Oh, well, it's true, sir. I was there. He came upon the purse, and it was filled with gold ducats.
It was? How many?
Oh, over 1,100.
Exactly how many?
1,107.
But Peter gave out that there were 1,100.
I suppose he gave it a round number.
Well, that settles it.
Settles what, sir?
Theodore, my lad, that money was stolen.
Oh, but I was there when he found it.
True, but were you there when he stole it?
But who says he stole it?
It's the only way he could have received it. He then hid the purse on the path, waited for a witness to come along. The witness happened to be you. And he pretended to find it.
Oh, but that's not the way it happened.
How else could it have happened?
How else? Could I dare to tell him about the mysterious stranger? Well, that would get me burned at the stake. And besides, how did I even know for sure there was a stranger? Mysterious or otherwise. I didn't know what to say. So, I said nothing. I wandered around for hours just trying to think. And then, finally, I decided to go see Uncle Peter. But he wasn't at home. Where is he, Margaret?
In prison.
No.
The money, the gold, is in the hands of the sheriff. And Uncle Peter must wait for trial.
Margaret, he's innocent.
I know, but the astrologer is inflaming the entire town against him.
Why? Why does the astrologer hate him?
I don't know.
How will you live?
Oh, I'll manage somehow.
People will stop sending their children here for music lessons. And, Margaret, you know how I feel.
No. No. Thank you, Theodore, but I would only bring you misfortune.
I don't care.
You would after a while.
Well, then at least let me help you.
I couldn't take anything from anyone, Theodore. The Lord will help.
With all due respect, it didn't look as if the Lord was going to be of much help. Old Ursula, who was cook, chambermaid, housekeeper, and everything else for Uncle Peter, tried the best she could, but she was unable to create miracles. I tried giving her money, which she accepted after I had told her to tell the proud Margaret that she had found the money in the street. But that couldn't go on indefinitely. There's a limit to how much money one can find lying around, and how often. I was walking through the woods, feeling very sorry about everything, when suddenly, he was standing there, Satan himself. Why? Why did you let these things happen to Uncle Peter?
Well, I didn't let anything happen. I told you, and quite clearly, it would affect the course of the rest of his life. Finding that money would set an entire new chain of events in motion.
All right, but we have to do something to help.
Why? Why do you always feel you have to help people? You see where it can lead.
But I can't just let him go under.
Why not?
Huh. I suppose that's the difference between you and me.
Now, let me tell you the difference between us. Man is made of dirt. Remember, I saw him being made. I am not made of dirt. Man is a museum of diseases, a home of impurities. He comes today, he's gone tomorrow. I am of the aristocracy of the imperishables. Yes, oh yes, one more thing. It's the smallest thing, but the most important. You know what it is?
No.
Man has the moral sense.
The moral sense.
Hmm. Do you know what that is? The moral sense.
I'm not sure that I do.
Well, you should find out. You have it. I don't. And that's the difference between us.
I couldn't win an argument with him. We walked along the path, chatting about everything under the sun, when I happened to notice Ursula. Old Ursula, sitting underneath a tree. She had a sickly-looking stray kitten in her lap. Satan.
Yes?
Help her.
Why?
She works for Uncle Peter and Margot. She and Margot are starving. Help her to help Margot.
Once again, you want me to help someone.
Just see that they have enough to eat.
You know what I told you about introducing a different link into the chain of someone's life?
But they're starving.
Oh, this moral sense of yours. Very well. Good day, Mother. What have you got there?
Any fool can see. A kitten.
I understand you're very poor. Why do you want to add another mouth to feed? Why not give that poor thing to some rich person?
The rich wouldn't want this unfortunate creature. It's only the poor that have charity in their hearts. God will provide for this kitten.
Oh? What makes you think so?
I know so. Not a sparrow falls to the ground without his seeing it.
Ah, yes, yes, but it falls just the same, huh? So what good is seeing it fall? What good does it do the sparrow?
No. Oh, go about your business, you blasphemous fool, or I'll take a stick to you.
I was terrified. There was no way to talk to Satan. He only smiled at her as if a mere mortal were incapable of insulting him. She jumped to her feet and the kitten leaped from her lap and started running around her. She was amazed.
Why, what's come over it? A while ago, the kitten could hardly walk.
Why don't you keep it?
Oh, it's such a pretty one. The home is so lonely with the master locked up in jail. Poor Miss Margaret. Oh, she'd be glad of the company.
Besides, you can have an income from that cat.
An income? Are you mad?
This particular kind of cat is called a lucky cat.
Mm. And why is it lucky?
Well, the cat isn't particularly lucky. The owner is lucky.
And why is the owner lucky?
Because every morning the owner of this cat finds 4 silver groschen in her pocket.
Have you nothing better to do? You're lying, making a fool of me.
Now look in your pocket.
You'll be punished for that. It's Russian. In my pocket, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 silver groschen. Oh, sir. Dear, kind master and benefactor, let me kiss your hand.
I told you it was a lucky cat.
Oh, it is. It is.
The 3 of us walked back to the house. Ursula said, we must stay for supper. Poor Margaret. She didn't mean to be inhospitable, but what on earth was there to eat? She was so embarrassed. But that cat was an enchanted thing. If you put a fish in the frying pan, as soon as you took it off, bang, another one appeared in its place. If you poured wine from a bottle, there was just as much left as before you started. Margaret was absolutely astounded by it all.
More fish?
Yes, mistress.
Well, where did you get it, Ursula?
It's a gift of Providence.
And the wine?
Providence.
Now, Ursula?
Miss Margaret, don't you believe in Providence?
Well, of course I do, sir.
Well, then why do you question it when you see it?
Well, I don't know.
I have chicken and beef.
Ursula?
Providence, mistress.
I stole a glance at Satan. He had that amused smile on his face. And I looked at Ursula and Margaret. They were so happy. From being faced with actual starvation, they were now living in the midst of plenty. I was convinced that finally, everything would be all right. After all, what could go wrong here? A
friend Theodore. He keeps thinking everything's going to be all right. At times, he forgets he's a character by Mark Twain, who liked to set his heroes up and then knock them down. We have some more ups and downs due in Act 3, which I shall bring to you in just a few moments.
The 1977 Buick Regal. It comes with Buick's terrific V6 engine. It carries six people and lots of Buick comfort. It's lean, it's maneuverable in city traffic. It's the most luxurious mid-sized car Buick builds. Yeah, this new Regal is pretty much everything a car should be, except for one thing. It isn't yours yet, but it can be. Just see your Buick dealer for a test drive. Soon.
Wonderful baby, living on love. The Sandman says maybe he'll take you above.
Child abuse kills at least 2,000 children a year. For more information about child abuse and how you can help, write Prevent Child Abuse, Box 2866, Chicago, Illinois, 60690. A public service message of this station, the Advertising Council, and the National Committee for Prevention of Child Abuse.
Where are they now, Arnie?
Middle of the third quarter.
Well, if the game goes into overtime, us germs really get our kicks. Just look at them leftovers.
Yeah, lucky for us, Salmonella. These people didn't clear the table before the game started.
Wait till we finish working over that chicken.
That's what they get for leaving it out for 2 hours at room temperature.
Will us germs ever score? Uh-oh.
What?
Here comes trouble.
Come on, honey. We've got to get this table cleared and the food put away.
Okay.
Oh, no. Interference.
They know their defense, Arnie.
Gee, I'm sure glad we learned about the temperature trouble zone for germs growing on meat.
Trouble zone. That's between 40 degrees and 140, right?
Sal, let's make a quick pass to the kitchen. Maybe we can find some dirty platters and utensils.
Boy, Ed's family sure got food poisoning last week. What did you send off for that free pamphlet? I want to tell him.
Food Safety, U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington, D.C., 20250.
Sal, when they refrigerate the leftovers in time, that's the ball game for us, James.
Yeah.
Once again, Theodore has asked the mysterious stranger, who is Satan himself or else his nephew, and does it matter, to interfere with what seems to be a natural course of human events. And really, he asked for little enough, just some food to keep them alive. And the stranger certainly has been generous, probably too generous.
Yes?
Oh, you're Gisela Knorr, aren't you?
Yes, Master.
What are you doing here?
Oh, I work here for Ursula.
You do?
Oh, yes. I scrub the pots and pans and dishes and floors and windows and walls. I scrub everything.
Is Miss Margaret in?
Oh, no, sir. She is not home.
And Ursula?
Oh, yes. She's drinking her tea in the kitchen, sir. Come in.
How do you like my servant, Master Theodore?
But is it wise?
Wise? I can afford her. You should know all about my lucky cat. I can have anything I want. And you know what I wanted all my life.
What I'm trying to say is...
A servant. Now, this might not mean anything to you, but if you were a servant and spent all your years serving others, why, you'd want to have...
I'm asking if it's wise to engage Gisela Knorr. After all, her grandmother was burned as a witch.
I know, but there's nothing wrong with her.
Oh, I'm not saying there is. I only think...
The truth is, she's the only one I could get to come here and work for me.
Of course, I worry by nature. And since I feel the way I do about Margaret, I'll worry about any trifle that might seem to threaten her. But this time I tried to dismiss my worries. I almost succeeded. And then I was walking down the street in the village, I was about to turn the corner when I heard voices. I knew those voices. One was Gisela. The other was the voice of the astrologer.
So, Gisela, my good girl, what are you doing these days?
Well, sir, I'm employed by Ursula.
Ursula?
She's the housekeeper for Uncle Peter. She gives me 2 silver groschen a week.
2 silver groschen?
Besides my keep and my clothes.
She must be wealthy.
Oh, they live off the fat of the land, let me tell you. The prince himself don't sit down to a better table.
Well, well, well. Thank you, Gisela.
That thank you, that sent cold shivers down my spine. I had to do something. The astrologer. He'd visit the house. He'd see the frying pan that never emptied itself, the wine bottle that was always full. His mind would gladly leap to one conclusion. Witchcraft. And both Margaret and Gisela would be doomed. There was nothing I could do by myself. I needed help.
Are you looking for me?
You have to help.
Again?
Please.
You want me to save them from being charged with witchcraft? Admit it.
Well, no, not exactly. I want you to interfere, but not really interfere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only asking for a return to the status quo. Let it be as if you didn't help.
Oh.
Well, that's very simple, isn't it?
It's so simple, you don't even need me. You could have handled the matter yourself.
Me?
Of course. What is the source of all their bounty?
The cat.
Yes, the lucky cat. Therefore, all you have to do is get rid of the cat.
Get rid of the cat?
And kill the cat.
Oh, but I couldn't kill an innocent animal in cold blood. Margaret will never talk to me again.
Well, if she's to be burned at the stake as a witch, she'll never talk to you again either. Are you actually weighing between Margaret on the one hand and that cat on the other? Oh, this moral sense that you humans have. Here, where are you going?
He knew perfectly well where I was going, and I could hear him laughing off in the distance as I raced for Margaret's cottage. I prayed to be on time, to get there before the astrologer did.
Theodore.
Where's that cat?
Why do you want it?
Where is it? Your lives depend on it.
Have you taken leave of your senses?
Ah, there she is.
Theodore, put that cat down. What are you doing?
I'm taking her away.
Away? Why?
Do you want me to kill her here, in front of your eyes?
Theodore, you can't.
I said get out of my way. There isn't a moment to lose.
Ah, good morning. I knocked, but no one heard, so I came in. Are we having a lover's quarrel?
Oh, Sir Astrologer, I was just leaving.
Theodore, I never want to see you again.
Deed has been done, I see.
Yes. But you'll never speak to me again.
Well, women seldom realize how long never can be. You saved her. The astrologer asked if he could have a bite of food and a drink of wine. And you know, there was nothing in the house. Nothing at all.
I've lost her. I've lost her for good.
He was quite disturbed about it. And angry with himself for having listened to the wild story of a stupid young girl. Well, well, well. All in all, it was a good day's work for you.
Why did I have to get rid of that cat?
Oh, that cat was wandering alone in the woods and ill just a few weeks ago. It was doomed in any event.
I didn't see my mysterious stranger for a while after that. I didn't see anyone. Margaret would have nothing to do with me. And I didn't care to have anything to do with anyone else. Life was lonely and sorrowful. And I was having all sorts of melancholy thoughts when there was a knock on my door one morning.
Theodore.
Margaret.
May I come in?
Oh, please.
I've come here to ask you a favor.
Anything.
The Duke arrived this morning, and my uncle is to be tried this afternoon.
Oh.
And he needs a lawyer.
You want me to defend your uncle?
Yes.
Oh, but I'm not really very good.
You believe my uncle is innocent. In your heart, you believe it, don't you?
Yes.
Then you'll be better than a smart lawyer who doesn't believe it at all.
Margaret, about the cat.
I can only believe you had a good purpose in mind, although what it was, I'll never understand.
Then you forgive me.
I forgive you.
How could I possibly get Uncle Peter acquitted? The astrologer was put in the witness box. I did the best I could. Now, Sir Astrologer, you claim these gold coins are yours.
I do, young man.
I, myself, was present when Peter found them.
You mean when he claimed he found them?
If the money is yours, how did you come by it?
I found the bag in the road.
When?
More than 2 years ago.
And what did you do?
I brought it home, hid it in a secret place in my observatory tower, intending to find the owner if I could. I made diligent inquiry, but nothing came of it.
And then?
And then I thought, why not use the money to finish the foundling wing in the orphan asylum? So I took the money out of its hiding place and counted it to make sure it would be enough. And then, I'm sorry to say this, just as I was restoring the bag to its hiding place, I looked up, and there was Peter standing behind me.
Well, how could that be?
Oh, he often came to my place unannounced to ask for a little help. He was quite needy.
Proceed, sir.
I became uneasy and decided not to use the money just then, but to wait a bit longer in case the owner might show up.
And then?
When I heard of Peter's find, I was happy for him, naturally.
Naturally.
I had absolutely no suspicion. Until I discovered my own coins were gone. And I detected three suspicious circumstances in Peter's story.
Well, please name them.
A, Peter claimed to have found his money in a path. I found mine in the road. B, his find consisted exclusively of gold ducats. So did mine. C, he found 1,107 ducats. I found exactly the same.
It was telling evidence. I could see it on the faces of all in the court, especially the Duke. Besides, who would be inclined to disbelieve so powerful a person as the astrologer? They would find Peter guilty for sure. And suddenly he was there. Satan, in the back of the room. I turned to the Duke. Your Excellency, may I have a short respite?
Granted.
Listen to me. We must save him.
You never learn.
The disgrace of the scaffold.
Your moral sense, it will be the death of you one day. Go back there and call a witness.
What witness?
It will occur to you at the right time.
Now, Sir Astrologer, suppose we prove that this money on the table here is not the same money that you found. Then it would belong to Peter.
I would say so.
Your Excellency, may I call another witness? I should say, witnesses.
Your Excellency, it's too late in the trial for new witnesses.
But these are not new witnesses. They have already been partially examined. The coins, Your Excellency, they are witnesses.
But coins cannot speak, young man.
Oh, but they can.
Witchcraft.
Be careful, young man.
Look, you see, each coin speaks. Each coin declares it is not the one the astrologer claims he found 2 years ago. By its date, each coin proclaims it. Each coin declares it did not exist 2 years ago. If Your Excellency will examine the dates, he will see that these coins were only minted at the end of this year. They're scarcely 6 months old. There was a great shout of approval. The astrologer had finally been brought to book at last. And the money was restored to Peter, and everyone crowded around him. He had many friends now. I looked around to thank Satan, but he had disappeared. Finally, I made my way over to old Uncle Peter. Sir, what is the moral sense?
The moral sense? Why, that is the faculty that enables us to distinguish good from evil.
Well, that sounds as if it could be considerable trouble.
Oh, yes, 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 but it's the most valuable thing we have.
Valuable?
Good heavens, lad, it's the one and only thing that lifts us above the beasts and makes us certain that one day we shall inherit immortality.
Theodore never saw Satan again. Not in this life, anyhow. But he never forgot him. And he never forgot the moral sense, either. Nor should you. Nor should I. And neither did Mark Twain. Even so, there were times when he insisted the thing was more trouble than it was worth. But there's never any trouble around here. You just wait around for a few seconds, and I'll be back.
Your car. There are a lot of ways it can waste gas and money. Stopping and starting too much. Going too long without a tune-up. Driving too fast. Or just plain too much. But a car can't do anything by itself because a car hasn't got a brain. But you have. Use it to save gas and money. Drive smoothly, get tune-ups, consolidate trips, don't speed. Drive less. In other words, drive with your head. You'll save gas, you'll save money. A public service message on behalf of this station and the Federal Energy Administration.
Mark Twain, by far the funniest man our country had ever produced, and yet underneath a wisdom and an understanding. For it was Mark Twain who wrote, "What a silly, poor thing is human life. How childish its ambitions. How ridiculous its pomps. How trivial its dignities. How cheap its heroisms. How capricious its course. How brief its flight. How comic its tragedies. How tragic its comedies." And then, having said all this, he proceeded to make it all very funny. Our cast included Tony Roberts, Joe Silver, Marion Seldes, Bryna Rayburn, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Look out the window.
Okay. Any window?
Any window. What do you see?
Have I missed something?
It isn't raining.
That's right. There's no rain.
The thunder stopped.
But just a few seconds ago, downstairs, I heard it. I know I heard it.
Look out there. The grass isn't wet. The flowers are all standing up straight. The paths are dry.
Well, now, look, that's not possible. I mean, there couldn't have been a terrific storm in one part of the house and sunlight and roses and all those beautiful things in another part. That's just not possible.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. A sprawling residential section of Chicago's near south side is blacked out as firemen battle a five-alarm fire in an electric power plant serving that section of the city. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. With the latest on the Chicago fire, here is Len Walter of CBS station WBBM.
Five alarms and one special alarm have already been pulled for the spectacular blaze. It's confined to a Commonwealth Edison power generating plant on Chicago's near south side. The firemen are having great difficulty battling it because the flames are traveling along a three-block-long coal conveyor belt. It stretches from ground level to the top of the huge generating plant. During an explosion, plant officials shut down the generators, cutting off electric power to about 123 square blocks of homes and businesses. Also, firemen are attempting to rescue one of their colleagues who was buried under concrete and twisted metal when a huge portion of the conveyor collapsed. He was standing on the conveyor belt at the time. The trapped fireman is still alive and is able to talk with his rescuers. Len Walter for CBS News, Chicago.
President-elect and Mrs. Jimmy Carter are spending the night at Blair House, diagonally across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House. In the morning, Mr. Carter will meet with a succession of Ford administration cabinet members. Then in the afternoon, he and the future First Lady will pay their first visit to their future home, the White House. Spokesmen for both the president and president-elect say the meeting will be private unless aides are requested. A freewheeling and informal discussion is expected. Egypt's President Anwar Sadat, according to an interview in Time magazine, wants President-elect Carter to give the Arab-Israeli conflict priority handling. Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, noting Sadat's comment last week to visiting U.S. congressmen that Egypt is prepared to negotiate peace terms, said in a Sunday public statement, "If you are serious about this word peace, let us negotiate." Further negotiation is on tap in Lebanon in an effort to make that war-torn country a viable state once more. More on that from CBS News correspondent Mike Lee in Beirut.
Speaking on the eve of Lebanese Independence Day, President Ilyas Sarkis told a nationwide radio and TV audience that security is the number one priority now, but that attention must soon turn to rebuilding the country. Sarkis hinted that private businessmen whose shops and factories were damaged in the war will be given tax breaks and interest-free loans. Sarkis issued a warning to rival political parties by declaring there will be but one administration in the country. Over the past year and a half, various parties had become virtual miniature governments in their own neighborhoods. Sarkis said a lot of outside money will be needed for reconstruction, but assured the Lebanese they still have many friends throughout the world willing to help. Mike Lee, CBS News, Beirut.
Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev visits Romania Monday in what spokesmen in both countries are calling an exceptionally significant development. Romanian leaders are hoping for what they call a Yugoslav result, referring to Brezhnev's visit to Belgrade last week and his public acknowledgement of the autonomy of Yugoslavia, like Romania, forging a posture as an independent communist state with friends in both the communist world and the free world. The United States and Romania Sunday signed a 10-year trade agreement. It's considered the broadest pact ever reached with an Eastern European nation. Commerce Secretary Elliot Richardson says the benefits to the United States are mainly assurances to American industry against expropriation and any form of discriminating treatment. Romania is seeking to increase two-way trade with the United States to $1 billion a year by 1980. That would more than double the current level of trade. The military junta in Thailand Sunday took the first tentative step on a 12-year plan for a return to democracy. A 340-member National Assembly was appointed. However, the Assembly has no legislative power. Its only function is to offer advice to the government. Thai officials say they expect limited elections will be held in 4 years to select some members of a new assembly, although most will continue to be appointed. More CBS News in a moment.
It's Athletes versus MS, Multiple Sclerosis. This is Frank Gifford with the word on the fight against MS. Athletes from every sport are banding together to do everything they can to help stop the great crippler of young adults. MS strikes in the prime years, usually between the ages of 20 and 40, the best years in the life of an athlete, in the life of anyone. When fathers are trying to carve out a career, young mothers are trying to raise a family, Well, the sports world is fighting back against MS. People like Brooks Robinson, Tom Seaver, and Eddie R. Carroll.
Right, this is Eddie R. Carroll. Before now, the only team I've been part of is me and my horse, which isn't bad when you're riding such greats as Citation and Whirlaway. But I've joined the Athletes versus MS team because I know what this great crippler can do to a strong, healthy body. There may not be a cure for MS as yet, but there is hope through research. So join us. Support the work of your local chapter of the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Thanks very much.
The Australian government has decided on a Get Tough with Junkies program, planning to boost penalties for drug trafficking. Business and Consumer Affairs Minister John Howard says he'll push for a maximum jail term of 25 years and a top fine of $130,000. The present maximums in Australia are 10 years and $5,200. Howard, whose department enforces customs laws, says legislation will be introduced in February to increase penalties for trafficking in all drugs except marijuana. The marijuana maximum penalties would be unchanged from the present 10 years imprisonment and $4,000 fine. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
At 6 minutes past 11, looking briefly at the weather for the KIXI listening area. Vancouver is partly cloudy and 1 degree Celsius. Victoria with a 2 degree reading and partly cloudy. A few sunny periods today for both these cities. Possible showers tonight. In eastern Washington, it's partly cloudy in Spokane, 32 and cloudy. Wenatchee, 34 and clear. Omak, 25 and clear. SeaTac has a reading of 46 and partly cloudy. And in downtown Seattle, it's 46. Winds are calm. The outlook? Considerable cloudiness through Tuesday with some sprinkles, some clear periods. Night and morning fog. The lows near 40, the highs 50 to 55. Chance of rain 20% this morning, rising to 40% by tonight.